Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest is Rich Cook. Rich and I share one thing in common. Rich is both a businessman and an activist. Well, I'm a retired small businessman, and I hope I most certainly am an activist. I'm very concerned about all the issues we discuss on this program and all the many that I write about, and I seem to be turning out all kinds of stuff. And I get asked to comment on them, asked to go on other programs, and I must say I do love it. It keeps me going all the time, and what better way to spend my later years in life. Still lots of energy, still going strong, hope it continues. So much to do and never enough of us to do it. Among the activist areas where Rich has been involved in, he's been involved with Common Cause, Maine People Concerned, the ACLU, Witness for Peace, the Union of Concerned Scientists, and on and on and on and on. So much about him we could talk about, but we really want to talk about issues. Rich, I welcome you to the program, number one.
Well, thank you, Steve.
It's great having you on. I suggested when we exchange emails that we talk some about the Gulf crisis, that it may have dropped out of the news, but it certainly hasn't dropped out of the lives of the people affected. And there's no doubt in my mind that the worst of it is yet to come. And one abuse, I call what happened in the Gulf, Rich, the greatest ever environmental crime. I'm not so sure it was an accident, but even if it was, what's gone on in the Gulf, there's only one way to describe it. It's a crime, and BP has worsened the crime by everything it's done since the day that accident happened last April. It's outrageous, and unfortunately the Obama administration is complicit with them all the way, which is no surprise, but I guess this concerns you as well.
Yes, as you know, I did a video that attempted to illustrate how BP has hidden the oil by essentially dispersing it, or technically emulsifying the oil, which will keep the oil distributed below the surface of the water primarily, so the amount that's available on the surface for either skimming to clean it up or therefore wash up on the beach is minimal, which means that BP's cleanup costs are going to be drastically reduced at the expense of essentially killing a lot of marine life that would otherwise be spared. And the prism that I think is instructive for people to use in looking at this is that this represents a kind of, you said criminality, but and also the fact that we have government complicity. This has all taken place after 9/11 and after everybody's senses were heightened about our being attacked. Following 9/11, as we all know, the Department of Homeland Security was formed, and yet the Department of Homeland Security was allowing, along with the EPA and OSHA and other regulatory bodies that should have known better, they were allowing BP to use this dispersant, Corexit, which is actually in many ways more toxic than the oil itself. and we could easily spend an hour just talking about all the toxins in the oil.
Oh, I've written about them a couple of times.
Exactly.
I mean, they have literally poisoned the Gulf of Mexico, and I feel a vast part of the Gulf, and I feel that anything that comes out of the Gulf is so toxic that no one in their right mind should eat it. Nobody should eat any seafood coming out of the Gulf of Mexico, and I fear that that oil has circulated far beyond the Gulf, yeah. And besides what's beneath the surface, and apparently there have been large plumes discovered,
oh, yeah.
And also that there have been large deposits discovered on the floor of the Gulf, you know, where it's out of sight, out of mind, but
right.
It's there, and it's going to be there for a heck of a long time.
Now, the prism, you know, I think for people to really look at this in many ways objectively or certainly from another perspective, after 9/11, if another country, if anybody, let's say, in traditional Muslim garb, let's say, or anybody wearing military outfits instead of people that have, you know, BP-type platform clothing on, had done this to the Gulf, what would our response be?
Oh,
and another way to ask that question is, if you're killed by, or your family are killed or poisoned by a close neighbor, does that make it any better than if you're poisoned or killed by a stranger or by an enemy? And that's something I think everybody has to sort of wake up about, because just in San Bruno, California, the other day, as occurs often, large corporations have what are typically portrayed in the media as accidents, or in the case of the BP disaster, it's a spill, it's a leak, it's minimized, because essentially the fix is in. The government is more interested in keeping transnational corporations happy than they are in protecting their own citizens.
That sure is true, Rich, and the fix is in for the big corporate giants. It's sure the fix is certainly not in for the little guys. And in all my years in a small business, we never got a dime in corporate welfare, and I think if we ever asked for it, they'd have laughed in our face. And this was back at a different time. I retired 11 years ago, before 9/11 ever happened. We were not in great shape before 9/11, but 9/11 really changed the dimension entirely. It just ratcheted the excesses to a much greater extent. And it let the government do. It was under Republicans, but I doubt it would have been much of any difference if Democrats had been in power. They'd have fought the same wars.
The strange thing for me about 9/11 is how the most popular TV programs on TV now are about CSI, crime scene investigation, etc. Almost every channel, almost every night of the week, and yet nobody spoke up about after 9/11, asking obvious questions about why isn't that regarded as a crime scene? Why aren't we preserving the evidence for examination? Instead, Giuliani is taking bows and taking credit for immediately putting everything on trucks and shipping it away. Nobody asked the question about how did Building 7 fall, some 40-some odd floors of a high-rise building with government offices, Giuliani's office, suddenly fall without ever being hit by an airplane. How can the American people be so much asleep that they will accept, you know, emperor's clothing-like statements without questioning them?
Well, Rich, I've discovered from personal experience that even intelligent people, very intelligent people, have had their minds manipulated for so many years, and they go to the wrong places for information. They'll read the corporate publications. They'll watch the corporate television program, so-called news,
exactly.
which Project Censored calls managed news. Of course, it's managed news. In other words, managed news of propaganda, which is what it is, and they actually believe the garbage that they're getting from those sources. I'm not talking about just ordinary people, ordinary intelligence, or even sub-ordinary, but reasonable. I'm talking about some very intelligent people that simply have not brought themselves around to question whether some of the stuff they're being told, I mean, is this really the way things are, or might there be another way? And today, Rich, today, anybody can easily go online and with a modest effort find out so much that just sweeps away the garbage that you get on your TV screen.
Right.
It really should be very easy for somebody to realize, I have been conned all these years, and I'm not going to stand for this anymore. And yet they don't do it. And I can speak from personal experience how this can affect somebody. The mind manipulation, the programming can be so intense that these people may not want to hear another point of view. Even if
clearly,
by some chance it's true, if it disagrees with what they've believed in for so many years, they don't even want to hear it. They don't want
right.
to read it. They don't want to consider it. That's what we're up against.
Yeah.
That's the kind of problem we're up against. So a program like this, Rich, and of course we don't reach millions like the big boys on corporate TV, but I'm sure the people who listen to this program know the difference, know what I'm talking about, and agree. But I mean, we need an audience many times what we have. We need people to realize that we have a very serious problem in this country. We literally are being conned. It makes no difference what body is in power. I'm thinking, I don't write too much about politics or elections. I may have to write something, Rich, with the election less than 2 months away. But but the election literally makes no difference. I, honest to God, don't give a damn which party wins, because
right.
they're both the same. We have a one-party state.
Exactly.
And Gore Vidal says it well. We have a one-party state. It's the money party.
Well, you know, Ralph Nader has been championing this or been saying that for a long, long time. And, of course, as you were saying, he's marginalized by both the media coverage. He's not allowed in the debates because of the way the two-party system controls who's eligible to be in the debates. And so it goes.
Oh, so it goes. And, of course, we have a system where $1 buys one vote. So you and I have $1, Rich, and we get one vote. And BP and all the other biggies, they have millions of votes because they have millions of dollars. So as Greg Palast says, we get the best democracy money can buy.
Exactly. Exactly. Actually, in terms of the election, I mean, one of the basic themes, this has been pointed out over and over, but it's so true. The national media portrays it as a horse race and focuses most of their energy and time and broadcasting on who's ahead, who's behind, who's ahead, who's behind, not what the fundamental issues are. And I know as a member of various groups over the years that very often the group can be polled as to the most important issues at the beginning of the year that they should work on. Let's take the top 10 or top 12. Well, similarly, it would be very easy to do the same thing with all of the candidates, national, local, whatever, for a particular office and have them go somewhere where their speechwriters aren't allowed to help. Their consultants aren't allowed to help. Have them list the top 10 or 12 issues that their company, their country, or their office faces, and then their recommended actions. So you could take all of that information, put it on a spreadsheet very easily. So at the end of all of this inordinate expense, at least the public is better educated. But that doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen for a reason. Because control, to the extent that all this money, the greater and greater cost of elections, turns people off, polarizes people to such an extent they may not even bother voting at the end of the end of the process, that's great for the Republican Party or minority groups, because they're turning the public off and therefore disenfranchising them because of the way the process is conducted. But it doesn't have to be that way. As you're saying, people can go on the internet, people could go on and get educated as to what the options are, and there could be a real group think about the best solutions to the problem through a process like that. Very low cost.
Oh, we could have real democracy if we have politicians that really were of the people, by and for the people, Rich. But of course, we have the exact opposite. the quote from Nader, I forget all the corporate, we got the government to buy General Motors for IBM, you know, that quote, so on and so forth. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, they're there to serve corporate interests, to achieve U.S. imperial dominance, and at least 90% of the public be damned. They simply don't give a damn about us. Only the top echelons, they're the ones that matter. And since 9/11, which of course is the seminal event of our time, and I am absolutely a believer in 9/11 truth. You say, why did the Building 7 come down? I say, why did the Twin Towers come down?
Exactly.
They shouldn't come down because two airplanes hit them.
Well, there are a lot of architects and engineers that have formed a group that want to reopen that examination.
Over 1,000.
Yeah.
Well over 1,000. I mean, it's impossible. I mean, I've read a couple of David Ray Griffin's books,
he lays
it out chapter and verse. It's just no question. And just one fact alone. I mean, jet fuel doesn't get anywhere near hot enough to melt those girders to bring those buildings down, let alone bring them down at free fall speed.
Right. And even the MIT authority that was consulted that came up with the pancake theory that supposedly, you know, made this all rational doesn't explain the central core of steel that, you know, can only be cut with something like thermite or thermate. There's no way some airplane is going to sever those beams. So there would be, even assuming the pancake idea could work, which is, I think, highly, highly, highly questionable, the central core would remain standing. It wouldn't all come down in nice pieces that can be carried away with trucks very conveniently.
Oh, absolutely. And I have so many thoughts on 9/11, Richard. One of them was if a writer wrote a script, a fictional script of what happened on 9/11 day, and gave it to a producer, the producer would laugh him or her out of his or her office, literally laugh that person out of his office. I mean, this thing is so preposterous. I'll go back and rewrite it and give me a plot that people may want to go to a movie and see this thing.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, but this goes back to the Emperor's Clothes story that, you know, we learned as children and we think, well, it's amusing, you know, but you never really realize that people can be led that easily. But I can't remember exactly whether it's the Milford experiment, the one where people...
I think so. There have been a number of them, but I think that rings a bell, but it's been a long time.
Where people basically... I mean, it's sort of investigating how the Germans could have done the things that they did, because their authority figures were telling them to, and you think, well, they're different than us. But then they did experiments following the war that showed that when authority figures told a person to administer what they believed was going to be a shock on a subject, another person that they could see through a window, they were willing to administer very severe shocks, life-threatening shocks, simply because the authority figure told them to do it. And of course, this also bears on how could you have an Abu Ghraib? How could you have a Guantanamo? How could a country that believes in people being innocent until proven guilty listen seriously to a president that says, we're going to suspend habeas corpus, or a president and vice president who say repeatedly, the worst of the worst are in Guantanamo? Well, who says? There's never been a trial. There's never been anything that could stand up to proof as to why anybody in Afghanistan caused 9/11.
Well, most everybody at Guantanamo, and this has been proved, and I've written about it, but again, it's been a while, most of the people in Guantanamo, going back to the beginning when there were 500 or so brought there, they were innocent people picked up randomly.
Exactly.
Because our authorities offered a bounty, and I remember the dollars. I don't know if they actually paid this off, but the bounty was 5,000 per Taliban turned in, 25,000 per Al-Qaeda turned in. Well, for an Afghan person, my God, I'd feel like a millionaire with that kind of money. I mean, a lot of people were turned in. I don't know what kind of payment they got. But, you know, a cab driver might drop off a passenger someplace, and he gets picked up because his neighbor didn't like him and said, well, he's a whatever. And he gets picked up, and he gets shipped off to Guantanamo, and they keep him there. And, of course, everybody was tortured. And all of the U.S. prisons overseas, including proxy ones, they were tortured. And this is still going on now. I have an article written but not out yet on what's going on in Iraq today, Rich.
Yeah,
today,
yeah.
It is at least as bad, maybe worse. Every single prison in Iraq, run either by the U.S. or the Iraqis, is an Abu Ghraib. Is an Abu Ghraib.
I can tell you, as a former veteran who worked with people that had served on the front lines in Vietnam and who had psychiatric problems, I mean, this is speculation on my part, clearly, but I think the incidence, the high suicide rate incidence for returning Middle East veterans is tied to the immoral and unethical acts that they have been asked to do by authority figures, because they go over as good people, believing they're protecting their country, they have the best of intentions, and then they're asked to basically participate in a Milford experiment, and their conscience begins to keep them awake, they can't relate to their families anymore, and they begin to go into a spiral. And just jumping back for a second to the 9/11 thing, because I really think that this is important. You said that it's a seminal event, and certainly it's been played that way in terms of our culture, in terms of our country. But people need to recognize is that in terms of world history and U.S. foreign policy, 9/11 is not the worst thing that can happen to a country. Because if you just play back to when Nixon was president and Bush Sr. was head of the CIA and we have Kissinger and so forth, the U.S. overthrew via the CIA the elected president of Chile. Just like earlier under the Eisenhower administration, Mossadegh, an elected president in Iran, was overthrown via the CIA. Now, what happened was a military state was put in place that the U.S. was very comfortable with for 17 years, despite, and I won't even go into it, all of the horrendous things that were being done. Now, that's one of the worst things that can happen to a country, okay? If we've done it to others, it says in the Bible, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Why should anybody be surprised that somebody might, you know, want to do that back to us, to the U.S.?
Well, absolutely, Rich. I call it a seminal event because look at all that's happened in the wake of 9/11, beginning with the Patriot Act 4 weeks after the event.
That was already ready to go. That was already whipped together.
Yeah, it was. The Patriot Act, over 300 pages, I believe. And I mean, it's impossible to write that. I mean, I write. I know writing takes time. And 4 weeks after 9/11, that thing was whipped out and passed.
Yeah.
And the Afghan war, listeners need to understand, I'm sure most do, that wars are planned many, many months in advance. The Afghan war was planned minimally 6 months before we launched the first attack. So, and that was 4 weeks after 9/11. And of course, the Iraq war was on the books, you know, get through with Afghanistan, then move on to Iraq. And now we're at war with Pakistan, the unreported war, our war with Pakistan.
Right.
And we're
at
war with Yemen. In an article I put out today, called The War, America's War on Islam. We declared war on Islam.
As soon as you make friends with the other enemy that justified the arms race, you know, the military-industrial complex reaching the level that it is, where we're only 5% of the world's population, but we have a military appropriation equal to the other 95%. So what does that say about our priorities? Other industrialized nations have better educational systems. They have health care for everyone. We don't. But you know what? We've got a military appropriation equal to the other 95% in the world. And if you don't have the Soviet Union to justify these arms that are being appropriated by Congress, who do you have? Well, you know, they came up with the idea, we'll attack the Middle East because there are resources there, and that'll justify all of these appropriations. So in many ways, the war on so-called terror, using terror, nevertheless, the war on terror replaced the Cold War, because you got to have some way to justify why you keep the Pentagon as bloated as it is.
Well, that's exactly right, Richard. I've written two articles explicitly on this topic, the fact that this country, the USA, has a permanent war agenda,
exactly.
A permanent war agenda, and if one enemy disappears like the evil empire, then you need to invent another one. Now, we had somebody who came right out of Central Casting who made it easy for us, Saddam.
Yeah.
Literally out of Central Casting. So it wasn't too long before we were in the Gulf War, and of course we declared war on Islam after 9/11. But I wrote a big article last March that I called America's Permanent War Agenda, and I go back a long time. Well, I went back mainly to World War II, and every single war we've fought, the real story of those wars is so different than the mythology that we're fed both in school and through the media, including World War II, when near the end of the program, Rich. But it wasn't long after Roosevelt was elected that he decided he wanted to go to war with Japan. I don't think we wanted to go to war with Hitler. We wanted Hitler as an ally because we both believed in the same thing. The only thing we couldn't agree on was who would be boss.
Well, and yeah, IBM was certainly working with him, and so were other big guys.
All the way through the war.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things is, in terms of another perspective, we don't have to have a permanent war agenda. We could be have a permanent environmental agenda, and instead of waiting for somebody like a German company like First Solar to become dominant in the solar technology, why can't the U.S. do that? I mean, we were the first ones to put a man on the moon. You know, we could apply all these engineers that are working in the military-industrial complex to being the best in the world, setting the example for the rest of the world in terms of applying technology for peaceful purposes that will save the planet. Because the one thing we don't want to do is piss off Mother Nature, because she's a bitch. She's bigger than any of these countries or weapons or systems or whatever. And that is the last thing we want to do. So
you remember the commercial about that? It's not nice. I forget the exact line, but a commercial. Years ago, it's not nice to get Mother Nature angry.
Yeah.
Well, you're right.
Exactly.
I mean, the ultimate
doing,
superpower is Mother Nature.
Yeah. I mean, certain groups are making out like bandits, and they feel like they can walk away like the head of BP, you know, get on your yacht and sail away. But again, as it with many things, most of the rest of the world will suffer, and there is no other planet at this point, so we got to make this right.
Well, that's exactly right, and I mean, if we destroy this thing, and we sure are doing a job destroying this planet, and once destroyed, I mean, it may come back, but it might take a million years to do it. And I don't think too many of us have that amount of time to wait, but we are literally destroying it. What an ugly story. You know, we wage all these wars. We don't give a damn about our own people. We certainly don't give a damn about people around the world. We're destroying the planet. You have to wonder, what kind of a species is this human species, Rich?
Well, yeah, I think there's a mistake, though, Steve, to think about it, to put us all in the same boat.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the people who run things, not you and I.
Right.
There are lots of level-headed, sensible people, Rich, but we don't have the Marine divisions to back us up.
No, well, we do and we don't. I mean, I think all of those people, servicemen and so forth included, are still voters, and they still have minds, and when something resonates, it can change outcomes.
It sure can change outcomes, and I must say this. I think the day is coming, but I don't know when, and I don't know all the events that will bring us to it. But I think the day is coming when push will have met shove, as they say, and people will suddenly realize that they have been harmed so badly, and they will be feeling so much pain. One person I know says it'll happen when they're hungry. When they're hungry, losing a job isn't bad enough. Losing a home isn't bad enough. When they're hungry and they don't know how in hell they're going to feed themselves and their family, that's when push will meet shove, and that's the stuff that revolutions are made of. Rich.
Yeah, but the problem I see with that, Steve, is that hope is that's when I think you get mob reactions, and that's not enlightened reactions. Yes, there are some examples in the past where the revolution has been transformative in a very positive way. But the danger is when people really get hungry and get desperate, they do desperate things. And I think what we're encouraging people to do is to start to think, to start to use the Socratic method and start to ask questions, to start to do more critical thinking, because you can't just trust the authorities. You have to realize, you know, as a grown-up, that these people got where they are because they played the game as it stands. And if the game is flawed, we've got to do something. We've got to see through to the truth, see through the talking points to what's really happening.
Well, Rich, you're absolutely right. You know, the way things play out, it probably will not be that way. I think the history that I know shows that things, instead of being settled sensibly, they usually end up being settled violently. And that's why we've had so many revolutions in world history. And I very much fear that the day is coming that we've never really had one here. I don't call a revolutionary war that kind of revolution. That was our elitist versus the UK's elitist. But I really fear that a real revolution is going to come here someday. I don't know when, but I agree with you. This is not the solution we want. That music means we're out of time. Oh, my God. The time always goes by much too fast. Rich, this was a great discussion.
Well, same here, Steve. I have been a fan, as you know, of your columns. I don't know how you do it. The latest one that I wanted to give you kudos on is The Economic Recovery, What Recovery? Right on.
Oh, well, I absolutely believe that. The evidence is right there if anybody wants to go look for it.
Yeah.
Rich, many, many thanks.
All my articles
are on my blog, Steve Lindman blog, in chronological order. Anybody can go there and enjoy, and absolutely listen to this program on Saturday and Sunday as well, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Two more great programs, two more great guests like Rich. Absolutely join us and make this a regular habit. Thanks, Rich.